of the Boundless Audio Podcast Network.
That's what I do. I drink and I know things. That's what I do. I drink and I know things.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to How Many More Wine, a podcast where I chat about shows and films with special guests over a glass or two of wine, usually boxed wine. This is Jocelyn, and Candy is back with me this week to talk about the pilot episode of HBO's The Last of Us. Our game plan, now Candy and I have not exchanged any thoughts, reactions, notes whatsoever yet about this pilot episode. So unless Candy tells me that she absolutely hated it and cannot watch another second of this show, our game plan is to do regular coverage of the first season, just like we did with She-Hulk in terms of timing and when those episodes come out. Candy's got real life stuff going on. I have real life stuff going on. We're gonna try to record as quickly as possible. But if schedules get in the way, we may like block together two episodes for one podcast recording, or, you know, it just may require a little bit of flexibility. So I'm just gonna thank you all for your flexibility around that in advance. And I've got some other episodes that are already in the works, and those are gonna continue to come out. So some weeks it may be more like a bonus episode, and then other weeks it just might be the regularly scheduled bi-weekly episode. We're just going to go with the flow and let the content come out and try to keep it timely. So with all that said, Candy, please say hello to the lovely listeners.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be back.
All right. So we've got all that out of the way. One last piece of business. Now, we're recording on a Monday. It's very early Candy's time. It's middle of the day my time, so it's not going to be a ton of the drinking today. But Candy, what are you drinking today?
I was just going to say it's still morning time for me. So I get alkaline water from Sam's Club. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is medically accurate, but I feel like it helps with my acid reflux. So I try to drink alkaline water as much as I can. But I'm not a doctor. I'm not prescribing anything for anything.
We are not your doctors and we are not your lawyers. We're just two gals on this podcast talking shit. But listen, I like that. I've got a case of that and I need to drink it. I've heard that it has great benefits for the skin too. So now you're giving me one more reason to get serious about that and stop using my Brita filter, which is usually what I use for water around here. Okay, I digress. All right. So I am drinking a mimosa because it's like mid-afternoon here. It's MLK day, so off work. So that's what I'm sipping this week. And if you're a pod newbie, this is your reminder that on this podcast, we drink, we know things, we use adult language, and we have a really great time. I have one correction to make. I was listening. Depending on when this comes out, it's going to be after the Avid Elementary episode, no matter how you cut it. I was listening back to that episode, and there is a point in the conversation where we were trying to figure out whether the current awards so the show just got awards from the Critics Association last night. Recently won Golden Globes, and we were having this conversation around whether or not these awards were for season one or season two. And I actually wanted to scream at myself because I'm like, when in the history of ever has a show that is currently on the air been getting awards for the season that is currently on the air? That is ridiculous. And it should have been readily apparent that these are for season one. But the timing, I just cannot, you know, my sense of timing has not been right in a long time. And it just, I don't know, common sense was not getting a hold of me during that conversation. But these awards clearly have to be for season one, just given the timing. So I wanted to say that because I'm sure there were lots of folks at home screaming at us and saying, what the actual fuck, ladies, get it together. Okay, now we've got that out of the way.
Well, you know what? They can be screaming at me because I genuinely, I swear sometimes I get confused because some shows that'll be still out or some movies that are still in the theaters. Because I think Avatar was nominated for something, and I was like, it's still in the theater. So y'all can yell at me. I was confused.
Right. And Black Panther has been nominated and winning awards, and that's still in theaters. But it just, mm-hmm. There might be some exceptions. For example, in the last season of The Sopranos, they did actually break out the final season into two, mini seasons. So I don't know. It's possible that in that situation, you might have a final season that gets nominated, in two different cycles for technically for the same season. Because like if you know, if you're streaming it, it's going to all play as one season. But when we watched it way back in the day in real time, there were like, I can't remember how long the break was, but there was a break between like the start of that final season and the end of it. So I suppose that maybe that's a set of circumstances under which that would happen, but it just did not. I just, for the life of me, could not figure that out. And that was not all you, because I was also like, I don't know, maybe it's this season. I'm like, oh my God, this is embarrassing. Okay. So on to today's discussion. Let me just say from the outset, guys, both of us are newbies to this franchise and to this property as a whole. So we have not played the game. We're not really familiar with the source material. If we are so inspired and inclined, we may, you know, do a little bit of research and pull in tidbits from the canon material to discuss. But otherwise, we're really just going to watch and enjoy and discuss this show from a newbie perspective. So if you're looking for like someone to do the hardcore analysis and do like the comparison, like, oh, the game did this. I mean, I have a few of those tidbits today, but if you're looking for that, this isn't the discussion for you. But I think you should still stick around because I think we're going to be good regardless. And sometimes personally speaking, you know, when I was listening to some of the House of the Dragon podcasts, I like all of them, but Nina Perez, and you guys should definitely support Project Fandom. You know, they did their House of the Dragon podcast strictly from a we haven't read the source material perspective, even though one of them had. They kept it all free of that and just treated the show as the core of the discussion. And I enjoyed that. So I think those conversations can be enjoyable. And I think that we certainly have a lot to offer here and we will be enjoyable. But I like to be upfront. I like to manage expectations because that is just sort of, I think professionally what I've always been trained to do is to manage expectations. So I want to do so here. And if I have some friends or some folks who have engaged in the source material, maybe when Candy and I do our like season long wrap up, maybe we'll bring someone on. I'll have to check with Maddie. I feel like Maddie always dabbles in all of this stuff. So Maddie would be like a great person to bring on if they've dabbled in this source material. We may bring them on for some like hindsight analysis at the very end. But in terms of our regular coverage, you got us, babes. So. All right. So Candy, other than you very generously and graciously agreeing to give your time to me, because I really just came to Candy and said, I want to do regular coverage of this. I don't even know that I gave Candy an option. I was like, I want to do this. And Candy did not say, bitch, what? Get out of here. Shut up. Candy was like, I'm in. And it's one of many reasons, other than the fact that she's a spectacular person, but one of the many reasons I love Candy, because she's always like just game to do whatevs, you know, when we're thinking about stuff we want to cover. But other than me basically saying, Candy, I want to do this, come do it with me, and saying yes, was there anything else that drew you to The Last of Us? Anything that had it already on your radar?
Yeah, no. So that's what, like, I never played the game. I no, like, I acknowledge that this is a game that has a large following, but I never played it, so I didn't know much about it. So I was intrigued to come into something fresh and brand new.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be fun. I was like, sure, I never played it. I haven't watched it. I don't know any folklore. Let's go fresh. I enjoyed that. So I was like, hell yeah, let's do it.
I love that. And I guess I should say, if you guys happen to be listening to this podcast and you're listening to it because you're trying to figure out whether or not you want to watch it, and if for some reason you haven't watched it yet, I'll just say by way of backdrop, this is basically a show in a nutshell that is set in a version of America that has been overrun with a mutated strain of the cordyceps fungus that basically turns folks into zombies. Much to my chagrin, I have learned that this is actually a real life pathogen that currently affects insects. Let's hope it stays that way, because COVID is basically eradicated any and all hope that I have in humanity about its ability to compassionately and responsibly deal with any massive outbreak of any sort whatsoever. As for me, like you, Candy, I hadn't played the game. I will say the previews, though, reminded me a lot of this Telltale game that I loved. It was the Walking Dead game by Telltale that featured a young girl named Clementine and this man named Lee Everett, who basically becomes her caretaker in season one of the game. Y'all, it is such a good game. Like, I have never been so emotionally invested in a fucking game the way that I was invested in that first season. I won't spoil it, I guess. I won't spoil the end, I guess. Okay, everybody, like, jump 15 seconds. So at the end of the first season, Lee gets bit and he dies. And it is the saddest thing ever, because like right before, he's telling Clementine, if you're going to survive out here, you know, you're going to have to cut your hair short. You're going to have to be able to, you know, be ready to deal with these zombies and these terrible people. And when she, at the very end, one of the last things that he says to her is, Clem, you know, don't forget, you need to cut that hair. Y'all, if you're still listening and you want to avoid spoilers, fast forward like 10 more seconds. When I got to the end and realized that Lee died, I closed the game down and cried for like an hour. I was just like distraught. Okay, if you fast forward it like the 25 to 30 seconds, now you're in the clear. So basically, my experience with that game and how heartbreaking and soul-crushing it was is why, one, I did not proceed with season two of the Telltale Game, because I was like, nope, I don't like crying over video games, so won't be doing that again. And I think it's one of the reasons why I was a little hesitant to get into The Last of Us, because from everything that I kind of casually seen, I understood that it was another one of those like soul crushing, heartbreaking stories. And I was like, I don't know that I can do this, which is really wild to make the choice to watch this show, because it probably means that tears are somewhere in my future. And then I'd say more recently, I mean, I think the obvious draw, right? Love Pedro Pascal, love Bella Ramsey from Game of Thrones. But I also want to give credit and a shout out and an episode plug to Jacob Anderson, aka Grey Worm from Game of Thrones, because watching him in Interview with a Vampire, his delightful standout performance, I was like, okay, I now have a renewed interest in seeing the actors from Game of Thrones and other properties. I want to see, like, you know, things that I may not have known about them as performers from Game of Thrones because of the characters. Now, obviously, Pedro was a standout, but Bella, both of them were given much more meatier and fun things to do than Jacob was in Game of Thrones. But admittedly, like, I'd fallen behind on The Mandalorian. I didn't watch Bella and her. She's in a Lena Dunham project, and I did not watch that for Lena Dunham reasons. So it's been a while since either of these two have been on my screen. So that was another draw. I'm like, oh, you know what? This seems like a nice opportunity to go see these folks, you know, these two actors who did not share any screen time in the show, to now see them together. So definitely a draw with respect to that. All right, let's get into the pilot, Candy. At a very high level, what are your overall thoughts about this pilot? This is now the time, Candy. You now tell me, did you love it? Are you excited about the next episode? Or were you like cussing my name and saying that like, you know, like the meme from Waiting to Exhale, Michael T. Williams is saying, you raggedy bitch, you made me watch this bullshit and I can't get my hour back. And now I got to talk about this bullshit. Candy, where were you at the end of this pilot as a high level?
Okay, first of all, I love that meme so much. I use it very often. And also, yay, Telltale Game fan. I love that format. I love Telltale Games. It's one of my, when I watch streams on Twitch, when I watch other people play video games, I am always down to watch someone playing a Telltale Game. Unfortunately, a lot of them are sad, but I think it's a fun format. Mm-hmm. Like the whole making decisions and choices and following along like a movie, but it's a video game. I like that.
Yes.
So yay. So we're twinsies on that. And I liked it. I like this show. I thought this was a great pilot. I think it gives you all the important information and it leaves you like, when it ends, you're like, oh shit, it's about to go down. Like, you're like, okay, I'm ready. What are they going to do next? So I really liked it.
Yes. Okay. One, I'm glad to hear that you liked it, because y'all know my love language is people, is me making recommendations and people liking them. Like, one of my friends, shout out to you, Clint, shout out to the Learn at Hands podcast. He texted me this week and he was like, I finally watched The Bear and obviously I loved it. And I was like, yay. Like, it just warms my heart when I'm like, when I bully people, basically like, you need to watch this thing. I would be devastated. Like, obviously, if you hated it, I want to know. But but I would take it on as a personal disappointment and failure as a friend if I'm not making good recommendations. So I am relieved to hear that you liked it because I did too. I want to go back to your point about the Telltale Games really quickly, though. The thing that I love, and it's really meme-worthy, and I don't feel like we meme this enough, but like in the Walking Dead game, to your point, Candy, like it's your interactions with the characters and how it influences things that happen like in the storyline. There is nothing that is more haunting and nothing that is scarier than when you make a decision in a Telltale game and the character and the little bubble comes up and says, Joe will remember that. And you're like, oh, shit. Like, bitch, remember what? What is he going to remember about it? Like,
that game was so good. Yeah, that's one of my favorite Telltales, the Walking Dead one.
Yes.
That was a really good one.
And it's because that's how people in real life function. Like, you do some shit and it's like, Jocelyn will remember that. But we really shouldn't be like that. But oh my God, that so-and-so will remember that. I'm like, oh, fuck, I made the wrong call. Like, I don't give a shit. I had to pick a side. So, okay, bitch, you remember it and we'll deal with it when we get to it in the storyline. So funny. I was thinking about that when you talked about Telltale. But no, I completely agree. Listen, I still need to kind of sit with it a little bit more in terms of thinking of it in sort of the larger universe of pilots and where I think this one lands. But I mean, the pacing was spectacular. You know, by the episode's end, I was fully invested in Joel as the main character. I felt like I had enough of his journey to sort of understand why this person would find themselves in this situation, but still had more questions about him, which is, I think, where you want to be at the end of a pilot. Like, obviously, no one at the end of the pilot should feel like they know anybody that's been on their screen. I also thought that the writers did a really, and the actor, shout out to the actress in particular, they did a great job at getting us totally invested in Sarah and Joel's relationship in very short order so that we felt the devastation of her loss. Like, you know, we didn't spend much time with her, but I was crestfallen because I knew the way the scene played out. I was like, fuck, she's been shot. She's been killed. And you go into it thinking there's no way that this character makes it, right? Because we've seen the previews and this is clearly about Ellie and Joel. And I'm like, I don't think Sarah's still in the mix. But even knowing that, it still hit me like a proper gut punch when she died in the pilot. And I read that in the game, it starts very similar where you start the game in Sarah's POV until she's murdered. And then you basically shift over to Joel's POV. And that would have, like, I'm not going to mention the spoilers from the Telltale game, The Walking Dead. But if I had experienced that playing The Last of Us, that shit would have absolutely wrecked me. And I think that the show does a really good job at recreating that devastation.
Yeah, and I really liked I liked it being from her point of view. I liked it being like a day in their life.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot of apocalypse movies, they do a lot of flashbacks and you're trying to piece information together. So I really like how they set up the pilot for this show.
Yes. I love that point. It's like the mystery isn't, I mean, there are questions about things in Joel's past that I think we still have. But the mystery, right, is clearly a forward-looking mystery. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not a backward-looking one that we're going to have to piece together via flashbacks. Mm-hmm. It's really about the road and the path forward. I like that premise as well. So I promise y'all, we're not going to do a ton of comparisons to The Walking Dead. But I did think about the pilot episode of that show. And I do think there will be inevitable comparisons by folks who watch both of these properties, because I think that The Walking Dead, for better or for worse, no matter how you feel about it, is like the last large-scale show to sort of delve into a zombie apocalypse. And now we have this new entry with The Last of Us. So the comparisons are going to be there. We're going to have a few of them every now and then, but obviously this won't be the podcast that's a side-by-side comparison of TWD and The Last of Us because they're two different shows. But for the folks who've watched The Walking Dead, check out our pilot project episode on that. You know that the pilot kicks off with the zombie apocalypse. It's well underway. You know, we discover it through the perspective of Rick Grimes, who was in a coma when the shit hit the fan. I thought it was a really compelling way to start that story and the series. and the series does from time to time go back and it does a few flashbacks to the pre-apocalyptic days, but it is interesting because you have this moment where Rick wakes up from a coma and he's already in it. So we're sort of exploring and trying to figure out what happened from his POV, whereas The Last of Us takes a different approach to your point, Candy, how we start off with this, you know, which should be an otherwise mundane day in the lives of Joel and Sarah. You know, it's his birthday, and through the perspective of the two of them and Joel's brother, Tommy, we watch things unfold. I want to hear your thoughts, Candy, about this narrative approach. Did you like it? Did it work for you?
Yes. So yeah, like I said, I really, I like how they laid it all out. I think it was a great pilot episode. I think they gave us like this is how the world was. This is what went down. This is how it is now. I think it was great. I'm laughing because I literally have been power binging The Walking Dead. So even when you brought up that you wanted to do Last of Us, I was like, my zombie, like all of my knowledge has come. I prepared this my whole life. I am freaking hating though, because I am fucking pissed because I have been, like I said, I've been power binging The Walking Dead. I did it all from the beginning, and let me tell you, really forcing myself through those last seasons, because good God, I remembered exactly why I stopped watching it. But I did it because I really want to watch the Rick and Michonne series. Bitch, how come they are moving that shit to 2024? I was like, these motherfuckers.
Oh, no. I did not know that. Okay, I'm annoyed.
So that's why, like, so the timing is really kismet, because I have been watching The Walking Dead and then this show came out. So anyway, sorry, that was off topic, but I was very angry because I was like, no, I haven't been like binging this shit for 200 hours straight for them to postpone the whole reason why I watched it to begin with.
Oh my God. Candy, next time you better just like go to YouTube and say and Google Michonne compilation, or like
hello, make my own fan video, damn it.
yes. And so I didn't know they had pushed it out. I'm really annoyed by that.
Oh, I'm pissed.
Because I dropped off. I won't say the character's name, but there is a character who dies in The Walking Dead, who is absolutely still alive in the comic books. And when they killed that character, I was like, okay, I'm out. I'm done. Because like, you know, this, I thought this was always going to be this character's story by the time the series ended. And they do like put twists and turns on it by introducing other characters, but well, not introducing other characters, but like going in different directions with characters that were already there. But yeah, I got annoyed. I had extreme Negan fatigue, because for me, he will always be the person who brutally murdered Glenn and Abe. So I just really was not invested in any redemption arc for him, but it was clear that they were going to try to do something with him in that direction because he's still fucking around. So it's like, well, right. And getting a spinoff too. So I'm like, if he's still around, he's getting a spinoff. Clearly, they're going to try to make us be okay with his existence. And I don't think I'm on board with that. So interesting to hear that. I have to think about, you know, we want to cover the Michonne series here. And I've got to think back. I got to think about whether or not I'm going to actually in good faith go watch the seasons that I didn't watch. Because I know, like, I know where the Michonne story picks up, because I did watch that. Like, I know where those characters, I know where both of them land in the end, you know.
Okay,
ultimately.
Well, yeah. I think you'll be fine then, girl. Let me watch it so you don't have to, because good God. I was like, and I remember exactly why I stopped watching. And your reason, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I agree. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? So
I was done.
I get it.
I was done. And not only did you kill this character, but you killed one of the most capable characters in the dumbest fucking way. It's like,
oh, girl.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry, y'all. Okay. We've got a little bit of TWD tangent there. Let me back it up and bring it back in. So I agree. I loved the perspective of this. I love that we got to see sort of how things happened in real time. I also thought that they did such a great job at that gradual buildup, right? From like a mundane, ordinary day. Sarah's going to school. It's Joel's birthday. He forgets to pick up the cake. She gets his watch, you know, and but how quickly, because I think like the timing of it, like how much of that we got, it was like perfect because you weren't bored with it. You were on edge because you're like, I know something's going to happen. I know something's going to happen. But they gave you just enough to be invested in their relationship as a father and daughter. And then they just quietly and creepily sort of ratchet up to the, holy shit, they're zombies. It was just such a perfect, such a well done and smooth transition. And I want to say a little bit more about that when we talk about our introduction to Joel, but I wholeheartedly agree. I love that we kind of got it. And I'm sure there might be some point where we do flashbacks, but I like that we kind of just got that all out on the table right from the start. Like, what are Joel's motivations? What motivates him? What's driving him? You know, what caused this outbreak? You know, which is, you know, I'm so sorry, guys, but going back to The Walking Dead, you know, it is not clear from the outset what's causing it. And you do discover that in season one, but it's not. And so I like that we just know from the outset, this is what it is. It's this fungus. You know, it's a really good pilot, like such a good pilot. So we
refreshing. It was so refreshing to me. I was like, yes, I like that.
Yes, completely agree. We do have a time jump in this pilot, a 20-year time jump, you know, where we basically drop off in the year 2003 when the military has gunned down Sarah. And then we jump ahead 20 years and to 2023, basically. And obviously there are probably things that happen in, you know, in the in-between that might matter, may not matter. I mean, some of it clearly matters because we hear it referenced in the pilot, particularly the relationship between Joel and Tommy and their separation, even though I like that we're told that we know that. Well, I guess we don't know that Tommy's still around, but for now he's presumed alive and still around. But did the time jump work for you? Did that choice work for you in the pilot, Candy?
Yes, because I feel like it ends on a tragic note and he is grieving. And I feel like grief is like that. I feel like you grieve for a very, very long time. I don't know why people assume that people get over things so quickly. And I feel like you're moving in slow motion and the world is going on normal speed or even faster speed. So I feel like if they had tried to do it in real time, we would just see Joel falling apart. That would not be good to watch. I feel like he has carried his grief. He moves on, but I'm pretty sure he's still locked in that grief and he will continue to be so.
Yeah.
So we don't need to watch that. Girl, okay, like, did you ever watch the Twilight movies?
No, I did not.
Okay. I have a whole thing. I like Twilight. I also like laughing at it. But in the second one, she is like emo as fuck. This bitch is literally in the fetal position for like 2/3 of the movie. And I was like, can you stop? Please not. So yeah. It's like, we don't need to see him. We don't need to see him in the fetal position for 3 episodes. We get it. He's going to be sad. He's grieving.
Right. But I like that point because it's not like it's, you know, it's smarter people than myself have said it, but you don't get over grief. You just learn to live with it. And when you're living with that kind of loss, it does not leave you. So to your point, I thought it was a great choice as well. And I like how they, you know, if you had any, like I never questioned whether or not the loss of Sarah was ever with him. Like, obviously, we know this. It's obvious. But I do like how it does get invoked again at the very end of the episode when they're in the confrontation with the federal officer. I was like, okay, yep, this is good. This is good. I like this. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I really enjoyed it. And like I said, I'm sure that at some point we will probably go back and revisit things as necessary. But I like that they use this pilot to really just put it all out there. So anything else is extra because I still, even if we didn't have another flashback, I would be satisfied with the backstory that we've gotten thus far. So on that note, I want to talk about character introduction. So obviously, Joel and Ellie are the big two of this series. I want to talk this week about Joel in particular, because I think we just had more time and we covered more ground with him and his background. And then I think when we get to episode two, let's talk about Ellie then, because we get introduced to Ellie and we do spend time with her and we do see things. I do think that she and Joel are both clearly very damaged people, but I want to put a pin in her until we get a little bit more time with her before we talk about our overall thoughts about the introduction to her character. And rather this week, focus on Joel. And Candy, tell us, what were your, give us all of your Joel thoughts from this episode, from the pilot, and your impressions of the character and how his introduction was handled.
How do I love Pedro Pascal? Let me count the way he, like, he's so good. Yeah. I just feel like he can really do it all. He can do serious. He can do action. He's very funny, but this is a dark and bleak show, and he's doing dark and bleak very well, too. I think he's, like, knocking it out of the park. I appreciate Joel. I think it's very believable that he's a dad that loves his daughter. And also, I think it's very believable that, yeah, he would make it in the apocalypse. So I'm really liking, as much as you can like a bleak apocalyptic story or person, but I'm like, I like, to me, it makes sense. It's because, you know what, I don't like when there's, when they try to force stuff. Like, I feel like if Joel was like a nervous Nelly or an anxious person that mm-hmm. wouldn't make him, in the apocalypse, I wouldn't want them trying to be like, and suddenly his daughter died and now he's a badass. Right. You know what I mean? I'd be like, I don't believe it. Like, I feel it's very believable who he was before. I feel like, yeah, he could make it in the world that they're in now.
I completely agree. So obviously Pedro is always great in playing the brave dad to the child who must be protected at all cost. We've already seen that in The Mandalorian. It's with so we know Pedro's got mm-hmm. that on lock. But I love the point that you raised about how his bravery is believable. And I don't even know if it's bravery. I mean, yes, he's brave without question, but it's not, I don't think that's what I would describe it as. It's the survival instinct. It's the fuck this. We're gonna fucking live, bitches. And what I liked about Joel, and I love the point that you made about how it would have felt unnatural if this had been sort of the story of a reluctant hero. I don't know that plays, if you're trying to sort of introduce this premise and trying to set up this character as one who's going to be the badass in this premise in like a pilot episode. We know that he's already like, okay, so maybe I'm assuming things, but I just, and this is interesting that I'm projecting this onto him, but I just assume that Sarah's mom isn't around, not because they're divorced or estranged. I don't know why, and I don't know that I can even fully articulate like what the vibe is that I'm getting, but it to me, Sarah and Joel felt like a mother and a father and a daughter who had lost her mom. Like I never felt like that woman was here and alive in any sense of the word. Mm-hmm.
I agree. Sorry.
No, you're right. And even if she is still alive, I still feel like whatever state she's in, she's not there and available for them. But I still, everything about it just felt like they've already dealt with grief. And I think that's what makes it so believable that his character could then have such a devastating loss with Sarah, but still find a way to keep going, despite having to live with that tremendous loss. I also just love how quickly he just moved into survival mode. And like, you know what I mean? Like, because I think that we kind of see it in Sarah, right? Like when things get weird and you know, the dog. Oh my God, I love dogs, but how fucking creepy was that fucking dog? When the dog like comes up to the front door and the dog's like giving her that creepy look, and Sarah does a thing that I think a lot of kids would do. Like I don't know. My instinct would have been, child, let me lock this house down and get my fucking ass. Like, I ain't going outside. But I do think as a kid, particularly a kid her age, I get the inclination to like want to go outside and figure out what's going on and her going into the neighbor's house and what have you. But I like that Joel was not about that bullshit. Like, I don't know what happened between Joel picking up Tommy from the jail. My best guess was that the fight that Tommy got locked up for, maybe Tommy was fighting a zombie. And I don't know if like Tommy gives him a rundown, but either way, somehow between that trip to get Tommy and by the time he got to that house, he was like, shit's got real. We don't have time to pack no fucking bags and get no nostalgic shit. Get your ass in this truck. We're getting the fuck out of here. And I'm like, yes. Because frankly, I don't want to be bogged down with, I don't need that level of like granular detail and sort of understanding how did Joel go from, you know, seeing something was wrong to understanding that shit's gotten real. You know, it's like that scene in all of the Bad Boys movies when like Martin Lawrence and Will Smith, it's like shit just got real and it's slow motion. I love that moment in a Bad Boys movie. Didn't need that moment in this pilot. I like that he showed up and he was about that business. He was like, nah, fuck it. I don't give a shit if that elderly neighbor is coming out here and she's elderly. That bitch gonna get clocked upside the motherfucking head because I ain't fucking around because she's dangerous and your life is in trouble. So guess what? I don't give a shit if she's living dead or otherwise, she going down. We ain't got time for these semantics and these kinds of conversations. I loved that. About his character introduction.
Yeah, no, I was it Tommy was like, what are we going to do? And then he was, and then he hit her in the head. Because Tommy was like, it's an old lady. What are we going to do?
Listen.
And Joel was like, I'll tell you what we're going to do. And he did it. And he did it.
Joel was like, here's what we gonna do. That bitch gotta go down. Or like even when they were like going down the highway and Tommy's like, but they have a kid. He's like, we got a kid too, bitch. We don't have time. This ain't a story about good Samaritans. Nope.
But yeah, no, I agree. I get Widow vibes from him. I feel that. And I think it makes sense because like I feel like Sarah is used to taking care not only of herself, but him too.
Yes.
Like
yes.
she's making breakfast, she's getting herself to school. I feel like this is like she does it often. Like she knows where everything in the kitchen is. I think that's their routine. I think because they've had to take care of each other for a while. So I get Widow vibes from him. So I agree.
Yes. Yes.
That makes
okay.
complete sense to me.
Thankfully, it's so funny because as I was writing my notes, I was like, huh, I didn't even explain how I got to this assumption, and I don't know that I can fully articulate it. But that is the vibe that they gave off. So we've raved and obviously we love this pilot, but I would like to hear, Candy, if there's anything else. I want to talk about like three things that we thought that worked well in it. So we'll just like go back and forth. But Candy, you kick us off. Give me one thing that we haven't discussed that you liked about the pilot.
Okay. I love the, we have talked about having an explanation mm-hmm. of what's going on, the virus and whatnot. I love them starting out with scientists. I loved how they made it relatable to today. Like mm-hmm. you were saying in the very beginning, unfortunately, seeing how this world reacted or lack of reaction to COVID, I absolutely believe, which girl, I did not know that fungi was a real thing. So I am I'm not appreciating that at all. So I'm like, oh no, I don't appreciate that fungus is real. But when those scientists were talking, I was like, yeah, that could absolutely happen in today's world. I have no doubt. So I like how they made it so relevant and realistic. Unfortunately, in our world, it's realistic because I fully believe, God forbid, if there was something like that, that people would not give a shit and we would be infested within probably minutes, knowing this the way people acted with COVID and shit.
Listen.
So, girl... It makes me very sad and upset, but I can absolutely see it. Oh, especially when he was like, what happens when the earth gets warmer? And I was like, sir, like right now?
Right.
You mean like, I'm like, oh, you mean like the global warming we are literally experiencing in 2023? You are alarming me, sir. So I liked that. I liked that realistic approach. I appreciated that it was relevant. I mean, it was scary because it was seemingly hitting too close to home, but I thought that was a great opening.
I completely agree. And yes, we mentioned it, but we hadn't unpacked it. So I'm glad that you had that on your list. And I completely, like, listen, I try not to use this word a lot because it's one of those words that I do feel like has gotten a little bit like abused and misappropriated, like how people do with woke and other terms. But I have to say, just to be completely candid, that opening was fucking triggering. Like, I was like, I'm gonna keep watching, but this is like, y'all are asking a lot of me because this is frightening. It's scary. I'm like, you know, I'm sure that one of the scientists mentioned the word pandemic, and I'm like, oh God. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna keep watching this, but I know this is gonna fuck with me because it's only gonna make me think about like how poorly we would handle this situation because people are fucking terrible and rude and selfish and everybody thinks that being a contrarian somehow makes you smart. A contrarian with no goddamn research. I did my own research. Fucking assholes. Okay, sorry. Let me rein it back in. Hey,
girl, say that shit louder. For the people, for the dumbasses in the back, say that shit louder.
Being a contrarian is not a personality type, and being a contrarian is not synonymous to being fucking smart, and it is definitely not synonymous to being a goddamn subject matter expert on anything. Okay, and that's where I'm going to leave it. I'm going to leave it right there because I'll spend like the next hour just going off on like all of this whole cult of contrarianism that is being substituted for actual intellectual engagement and discourse. So, anywho, instead, I'll kick off with one of the things that I liked. I liked the rules of zombie engagement. So listen, there are obviously like a ton of zombie properties out there, right? And how zombies engage, it varies by creator. So like, you know, if y'all don't like the Walking Dead comparisons, this is probably where you stop listening. And I'm sorry. But okay. But I am going to go to another zombie property that I did watch a crap ton of, and it was The Walking Dead. You know how those zombies function. It's like they smell you. And once they're onto you, they'll pursue you. But I think that The Walking Dead is a little bit inconsistent in terms of like how directly and aggressively they pursue you. And I feel like the rules of engagement change quite often in terms of like physical layout and like what they need the zombies to do versus what they need them not to do. I feel like the rules of engagement are very unclear actually on The Walking Dead, whereas the rules of engagement felt pretty clear here. I like how the zombies still look human. It makes them hard to clock. From a storytelling perspective, it gives this like additional layer of darkness to the show. You know, going back to The Walking Dead, that was a series, like I said, that started off with Rick Grimes basically, you know, putting a bullet in the head of a little girl. But that little girl is very clearly a zombie. Like, there's no mistaking the fact that she's a zombie. In this pilot, however, you know, we have this little boy that stumbles on to this, I guess it's a quarantine zone. And the way that he's like sort of zonked out, I'm like, I don't know. It's giving zombie to me. Like that was my, I was like, that little boy, I was like, is he traumatized or is he a zombie? And like, while I'm having this internal debate with myself about whether it's trauma or a zombification, I'm listening to the dialogue. They did a little test on the baby. He's clearly been bit or whatever happens, and they put him down. Like, and I get it because on paper, if you don't have a cure and these people are like literally going out and killing other folks and turning more people into, like, did I get on paper why that plan of action makes sense? But seeing that plan of action be carried out on what looks like a human child was hard to watch and dark as fuck. And I was like, oh, these are some very interesting rules of zombie engagement that we're dealing with here that I don't watch a ton of zombie properties. So I think this is probably the first sort of zombie property I've watched where the zombies don't look like full-fledged zombified, you know, where they still look human. And if that's the case, I'm like, okay, so this is going to be a little bit, this is going to, not hard to watch, but I'm like, this is probably going to trip me up a few times as I watch this show, because they're going to clearly be people that are like on their way to zombification and they're going to put them right on down. Now, I will say on The Walking Dead, there were instances where people got bit and you knew the inevitable was coming. And The Walking Dead does something different because usually they try to grapple with that a little bit more and give the person a little bit more time. But everybody knows that something has to be done. But usually they don't do the something until the person is like full-fledged zombified, right? Whereas this show, they're like, no. You're done. We are not going to be sitting around here dilly-dallying, waiting for you to turn. Nope, we're going to shut this shit the fuck down right now, because what we're not going to do is introduce unnecessary threats into our safe zones. But it was a lot. Like that, the little boy in particular kind of fucked me up a little bit. I was like, oh my God, but he has been bit, girl. I mean, maybe I would feel a little bit differently and be a little bit less in my feelings about it if I were living through it. But that was tough. But you even had a character who was like, this is a child. It's like, yeah, it's a child, but girl, the child got bit. So what are we supposed to do? And it also made me curious about whether or not there would be any ways to like evade their attacks. You know, like in The Walking Dead, they covered themselves in guts because it seems like, you know, cloaking your human smell seems to put them off of, you know, it tends to divert them. I'm curious to see if, as this series progresses, if there will be any sort of diversion tactics that would be effective with these zombies when people are like out in the wild and outside of the safe zones. Any thoughts on that, Candy? If not, you can go to your next one, but, or just both. You know, thoughts on that and your next one.
Well, okay. I would like to say, and this is widely known among my friends, because I'm a zombie head. I love a good apocalypse. I love a good dystopia. I love a good apocalyptic end of the world. And I love zombie shit. Mm-hmm. So I'd be watching those Korean zombie movies on Netflix. I watch Walking Dead. But I have always said, like, my worst nightmare is zombies that run. Like, I feel like the only universe I'd have half a chance is Walking Dead zombies that are slow. Like, World War Z was my worst fucking nightmare. Not only could those bitches run, they were Olympic sprinters. Are you fucking kidding me? Not only can you run, but you're already faster than me. Girl, dead, dying. I will martyr myself for the group, because the bitch ain't making it. The cardio is not there. So I do not appreciate that these zombies are fast. Like, and like you said, it's going to be hard to tell. They look human. They can run. They're like double jointed. Old grandma was like crab walking. So I was like, oh, these are my worst nightmare zombies. Well, here we go. So I just want to put that out there. I don't like fast zombies. Also, too, I hope to God zombies can't swim. I'm going straight to the ocean. I feel like that's my only hope.
Oh,
if there's
God.
A fast zombie, if there's a swimming zombie, if there's a long jump zombie, I kill myself. I'm not making it. I know that about myself. So I just wanted to say that. I think these zombies are very interesting, but I think it's interesting that they're fast, but it terrifies me that they're fast.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a trigger for me in zombie shit. How fast can they move? I always equate that to my chances of survival.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's because I would have the same problem. And the fact that they still look human. So you're asking yourself, is that just Usain Bolt or is that just a zombie? Right? You know what I mean? Like, is this a fast runner or is this a zombie? Bitch, I'm not taking any chances. You gotta die.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry. You got to put him down, because I'm like, yeah, I'm not making it. I'm not making it in fast moving zombie land. Absolutely friggin' not. So yeah, but I do think it's interesting. I do think too, because like I've watched a lot of zombie shit. I agree. This is the first time where they look more human-y, where I would have to double take, which is terrifying if you would have to double take whether or not this is a zombie. That's terrifying to me. You should know, damn it.
Right.
I should know right away.
Right.
That would terrify me. Yeah. Ooh. Okay. So off on that topic, now that I have chicken skin. But it's funny because like I said, I love zombie shit, but they do be scaring me. I'm like, oh God, I would not make it. So yeah,
I'm sorry, Candy. Wait, no. I'm sorry, Candy. Let me just
Girl, I'm like No, I just martyr myself. I'm like, a bitch dead. I'm dying. I'm not making it.
Oh my God. People are going to be so annoyed with me because I'm about to make another Walking Dead reference, but I don't care. I'm doing it anyway. And I like making this reference, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, but before you move on, I want to bring it up, especially because you've been power watching. Do you remember this season? It's when they're in Alexandria and Rick, he didn't got him a new girlfriend. This is before Rashawn.
Oh, Lord of mercy.
And you know, it's that episode where, like, the wall goes down in Alexandria and, like, the zombies all come in. And it's, like, Carl, Michonne, Rick. I can't even remember the girlfriend's name. And her two sons.
Jesse.
Yes, Jesse. There are times when I would watch that season and I'd be like, Jesse's son, the young one who would never come out of his room, and they would just have to bring cookies to him and, like, sit him, like, they would have to bring his meals and put them on the ledge because he didn't want to come out and fuck with anything in that world. It's deeply relatable to me. I'm like, listen,
you leave my food by the door.
Yes, you let me find an Alexandria, bitch. I'm going up to my room. Just leave my shit on the stairway. I'll just take my risk. And I guess if I don't get food for a couple of days, I'll assume that everybody's dead and that's probably my last days. And I guess decide whether I got a brave rally inside of me. But I'm like, people like to judge that little boy, but I'm like, I deeply relate to that little boy being like, oh, hell no. I don't want any parts of this. I just want to be in my room. And especially because Carol fucked that little boy up. Because he would come outside.
That was Carol's fault.
Yes, because he would come outside before that. But then Carol scared his ass because she thought he was, like, onto their secrets. And she terrorized that little boy. In fact, that's how he ended up getting killed. Because right before that zombie gets his ass, he's thinking about her last words. I love Carol, but Carol's she was evil sometimes. Just a terrorist. Just a fucking zombie apocalyptic terrorist. But as you were talking about, like, how it would feel, I was like, I think his name was Sam. I'm like, I know there is a part of me that wants to think that I'm brave enough to get out here and rally, but there's also a part of me that would absolutely be Sam.
Girl, well, so that's what I'm saying. Walking Dead universe is the only one I feel like I have a chance. I'm like, please give me a chance. I am not racing a fucking zombie. Now, if these bitches are Usain Bolt, no chance. Walking Dead, I'm like, okay, maybe I can survive a little bit. I can skip a little bit faster than these, like, feed draggers. That's my only chance. That's all I got. So my point too, I mean, we covered parts of it, but I said before, I loved coming in on Sarah's point of view, the daughter's point of view, and I also agree with you. I like the buildup. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was tense the whole first episode because I was waiting for this little girl to die because I was like, oh, this baby gonna die.
Yeah.
Because right away when I saw how sweet she was, and like we've been talking, I was like, oh, she ain't lasting the apocalypse. I said no. I said, oh, no, this poor baby, she is too sweet. She was upset when daddy clocked grandma, even though grandma was like turning her neck all the way around like the Exorcist. She said, mm-hmm. You killed her. And I was like, little girl, you're welcome. So like, well, so during the whole show, like for right away, I was like, oh, she's too sweet. She going to die. So I kept waiting. So I think they had good tension. When she went to the house, I said, oh, this baby about to die. When grandma started convulsing right behind her, I said, oh, Lord, here we go. Because I thought that it was going to be Joel comes home to his murdered daughter.
Yeah.
And that's where everything kicks off. So it was doubly more devastating how she died because I kept waiting for it to happen earlier. So they had me hooked. I was tense. I kept expecting for her to die and she didn't. So I feel like they got me a couple times with that. So I think they did a good job with that.
I completely agree. And yes, I was really worried about her when she went in that house. And I was like, look, girl, Sarah, get out of there, baby. You cannot help them. It is over for them. What you need to do is take that dog because that dog be knowing. Because that dog knew the second that lady was possessed or got exposed to the fungus or whatever, that dog just stopped and stared at her and twisted his head like, this bitch ain't right. That dog was also smart enough that as soon as he got outside, like he was like, all right, Sarah, look, girl, I'm trying to help you. And when he realized that Sarah won't try to be like a survivalist yet, that dog was like, fuck this, I'm out of here. That dog just yeeted off.
Well, I tried, baby.
Like, listen, I tried. I did my dog thing. I tried to save her. She won't be saved. I'm out of here because fuck this. Because grandma and these motherfuckers is not eating me. I am not on your menu, bitches. I've never, I mean, shout out to that dog. That dog was a real one, actually.
Yo. The smartest one there.
Yes, yes. You got to listen. You always have to follow the cues of your animals. Like if you have pets and your pets start wigging out, you need to check your surroundings because something ain't right in your ecosphere. Like if something is not right in your home, if your pets start acting funny, you need to sort it the fuck out. You need to sort it out and figure out what's going on because they be knowing and they be trying to tell you. They be trying to tell you every time.
Agreed. Okay, what's your next one?
So my next one, I like that there's actually a preservation of society. So when we get to the time jump, and again, y'all are gonna, I should just, the title of this episode is going to probably be like, we're not going to compare it to The Walking Dead, but we are. But I am, because here we are again. Now, I'm just going to be unapologetic about it now. So, but in The Walking Dead, right, that show focused a lot on people trying to find and rebuild community. And the journey is very much like that. I think the one thing that both shows have in common is that it's never the zombies that are biggest threat. It's fucking people. People are the worst. But we all know this thanks to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So no surprises there, right? But I like that that's not the journey and the story that this show is telling. Like, obviously, there is still like a rebuilding effort. But I like, like in Walking Dead, you don't have any traces of like government left over. And I think that works for that show. This is not a critique of The Walking Dead and the premise from which that show is told. But I like the different perspective that we're getting on The Last of Us, where you actually see efforts to trace and educate people on symptoms to be aware of once someone is turned. Like clearly they have a test that's established now that can check people if they, you know, have the presence of the fungus or whatever in them, the pathogen. Even like in shots, and I like that it wasn't anything that we needed to hear a character say, but it was simple, subtle things like flash to the wall. You see a timeline, like once somebody's been exposed, bitch, you got a smooth, like first 5 to 15 minutes, this is what happens. And then this is what happens. I'm like, I love that. I love that. At least from that perspective, we're seeing some proactive efforts. We're seeing efforts to actually understand, to actually educate people, to put them on notice about sort of what's happening, that we don't, that part of it is not the mystery in this show. It's really, really making it very clear from the outset that the threat, it's going to be humanity. And I think it's a really interesting story because the writers, you know, with respect to the government, like we're seeing resistance. I like that. And I also I like it from an interesting narrative. I find it interesting that the military response and the fact that basically people are living in a military state, but it's really concerning, right? To think of that in 2023, when you take it in combination with what happens in 2003, where Joel is clearly telling them, we have not been exposed. You know what I mean? Like, because the one thing I will say is the zombies look human and they look fast as fuck, but you know what they're not doing? They're not fucking talking. And so you have, you know, this soldier is looking at this father carrying his daughter whose ankle has been broken or otherwise injured. Mm-hmm. And it is horrifying, but also feels depressingly and eerily accurate that it might be the government response to just say, fuck this, we just go shoot everybody on sight. That is a horrifying prospect, but one that I think we're in a world that feels almost plausible in all of the worst and most terrifying ways. It's bleak as fuck, right, from a storytelling perspective, particularly when you realize that clearly that approach has allowed them to preserve aspects of the military because they're clearly still running shit. And then I'm sure that they're also recruiting people to their ranks, survivors as well. But just seeing, like I said, going back to that little boy that they just put the fuck down. And I appreciate that, you know, Sister Girl tried to be humane with him and told him, oh, we're going to find your favorite food. But I'm like, y'all just gave that baby a death penalty cocktail. Like, y'all just put that. And I know he had been bitten. But guys, this is a lot. Like, and oh my, I'm all over the place. But I like the fact that there's a preservation of society, and I like how in the pilot, they're then using that to like sort of introduce us to humans as a threat, corruption, and I would assume that if you're someone who's actually survived, you probably have moments where you question whether or not you're happy to still be alive, or whether you're happy that some of society was actually preserved given the current state of affairs.
I agree. I think after seeing how our fellow humans acted during a pandemic, I'm going to have to assume that everything is going to go to shit and it's about to be the wild, wild west. So I feel like that's how our world would be.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's terrifying. It's terrifying thinking that you would be living in a world where everyone is just doing what the fuck they want, whenever they want. There's no guidance. There's no morals. Anything goes. But it's true, too. Also, because I feel like living in America, we have a very strong threat of fascism around the corner all the time.
Yes.
And I also would not like living under that. So it's like, it's the, which is the lesser of two evils on this day today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mm-hmm. a very interesting juxtaposition. It keeps the tension. This is a very tense pilot.
Listen.
I feel like it keeps it tense.
This is what I would call, to borrow from Bomani Jones, this is a lemon booty show. Like, your booty is going to be like, you know, puckered tight. Like, you know, puckered tight. Tense as fuck. A lemon booty show. Candy, did you have anything else from the pilot that worked really well for you?
This is a little the geek in me, the blurred in me. I really love, so later on in the pilot, the character Marlene mm-hmm. comes about. She comes along with the introduction of girl, why did I have a brain fart on Ellie? I was about to say Bella. Ellie's character. But Marlene is the leader of the resistance. And the actress that plays her in the show is Merle Dandridge. And she's the original voice actress from the video game. So that's not really like a show thing. But I feel like it kind of is. So I think that is so awesome. She's a Black woman. She voiced the character originally. And I love that she is playing the character in real life. So I don't know. I just thought that was really great. I'm glad I was included in the pilot. And I'm glad she's included in the show.
So, Candy,
shout out to her.
You don't watch Station 19, do you?
The Firefighter, I might mm-hmm. have watched it. I don't follow it. No. So I might have caught a few, but I don't follow it.
So I watch it because the Shondaland still has a hold on me. I still watch Grey's and I watch Station 19. But I'm so glad that you mentioned Merle Dandridge because she's on Station 19 and I love her on that show. And I actually had a note about how much I love the diversity. Like the world, it's like, in apocalyptic times, especially after COVID and after watching how people responded to COVID, like particularly like, listen, I'm not making this up. There are articles that talk about this. How when COVID first, you know, was discovered and we knew it was here in the U.S., people were mostly on board with preventative measures. But then as time went on, the study showed that it was disproportionately affecting and killing people of color, Black people, I think Latinos were up there. I know Indigenous folks, Native Americans were up there too. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like is that information, like I said, I'm not hypothesizing here. There are articles that talk about this, mm-hmm. that as that information,
the restrictions started dropping off.
Mm-hmm. As that information became more widespread, the public support for preventative measures took a downturn. That's mm-hmm. not a coincidence. And like I said, I'm not pulling it out of my ass. There are articles that actually analyze and look at this. So it was a little bit of cold comfort to me that the zombie apocalypse broke out. And so people of color did still manage to make it because you have like a very, I think, sort of organic and diverse mixture of people, whether they be featured characters or just people in the background. We still have a little bit of mixture here. And listen, having, you know, currently living in a pandemic, that was a little bit comforting to me. And so I was so excited when Merle Dandridge showed up because I love her. And what I love about her on Station 19 is that they managed to find ways to weave in the fact that she's Blasian. Like, you know what I mean? So it's Station 19 doesn't get, Station 19 doesn't get a lot right, but I do think they've done that right with her character. I mean, they don't, you know, it's not like a constant thing, but you're very clear that this is a character who is of both Black and Asian descent. And I was happy that they did that with her on that show. But I love her. I was so happy to see her. Like, yes, Candy, yes to everything you said. But I just wanted to add that little tidbit in because it sort of connected to what I noticed about sort of the diverse array of people that we saw in this now post-apocalyptic society. Well, now, apocalyptic society, we're not post anything.
Can I just say as a side note, it always makes me laugh in apocalyptic shows when it's majority white people, because I'm just like, can we keep it 100? I feel like apart from like rednecks, I feel like rednecks can survive because they live off guns and canned beans anyways. But if we keep it a 150, suburban white people are going to be the first ones down. I'm like, Black and brown people been living off nothing for a very long time. They are going to be the majority in the apocalypse. They know how to fight. They know how to make a dollar out of 15 cents. It's going to be us and the rednecks. So I don't know. It always makes me laugh when it's like majority. It's not going to be suburban white school teachers taking over the world in the apocalypse. I need to burst that bubble. Anyways.
Yeah, no, they're not going to have to go through the measures that they're not going to have the sort of the innate sort of instincts that I think that people who have had to struggle. And to your point, it's going to be like working class white folks. It's going to be blue collar white folks. It's going to be, and frankly, listen, we're going to lose some people of color to that too, because the rich, I think just as a whole are going down. Like they think that they're going to be able to like, you know, preserve themselves and sort of buy themselves through an apocalypse. But all money is not going to have the currency that it does in an apocalyptic world. So I think just the rich as a whole are going down. Like, I love you, Beyonce, but girl, I don't know. I don't know if you're coming out of the zombie apocalypse.
Since you a capitalist, you're going down. Sorry.
Pretty much. I think that is a fair observation for sure. I think the other thing I had on my list, Candy, was, and we've touched on this, but I'm going to sort of highlight two scenes. The gore. It's a zombie show. And so you're preparing yourself for a little bit of gore. It occurred to me that this is a show that I cannot eat while watching, because I got to tell y'all, that scene where Meemaw with the neck turn was in that kitchen feeding on, I guess, either her daughter or her daughter-in-law's head, and she like lifts her head up and she has those tufts of hair in her mouth. Oh my God, I wanted to just throw up. I was like, this is so fucking disgusting. But like in all the best ways, because this is it's a zombie property. I want to be disgusted. When I say disgusting, I don't mean off-putting, but I'm like, I expect to be disgusted. And then there was that scene where Joel, and now I'm forgetting her name, but where they basically find that person walled behind that fungus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't know what the fuck happened and how the fuck he got in there or how any of that shit happened, but that was disgusting. Even thinking about it now, like, my stomach is getting upset. I can't even, like, talk about it too much because it was so disgusting. But like I said, in this kind of show, I expect to be disgusted. So this is not like a popcorn and wine show. So I won't be getting my Olivia Pope on and drinking wine and eating popcorn while watching The Last of Us, for sure. Any comments on that or anything else that we haven't talked about that you want to just highlight, raise up, or praise from the pilot, Candy?
I say fair enough on the gore. I was going to say, I don't know what it says about me that I surely be watching Walking Dead and chomping on some dinner. But I feel like I'm just desensitized. The show has been on for fucking ever. We're like 11 seasons. I'm desensitized already. I'm like, whatever. And that's probably not a good thing.
Well, interestingly, The Walking Dead doesn't give me the icks like that. And I do think I'm desensitized to it. I think I've been watching it. You know what disgusted
those
me
zombies
on
zombies for a long time.
Yes. You know what disgusts me on The Walking Dead? I was disgusted. There's this episode like where they have this like huge flu outbreak in the prison. But before they know there's a flu outbreak, it starts off like really like peachy keen. Like they've built a place at the prison. They're comfortable. Daryl comes in from hunting and this little boy comes up to him and he's like, "Mr. Dixon, thank you so much for that deer. It was delicious." And Daryl licks his fingers and then shakes the boy's hand. And I'm like, and to this
that shit grossed me out.
And to this day, my theory is that Daryl was patient zero, but Daryl just had a mal case of whatever the fuck that shit was. Cause that same little boy is the first one that dies of that fucking flu. And I'm like, Daryl Dixon, you were patient zero.
But he just has a gut of steel from like living off of possums his whole life. He's unaffected.
We have seen Daryl Dixon.
It on to everyone else.
We have seen Daryl Dixon kill a zombie or an animal with a boat. Take the boat out of the thing that he shot it in. And then when like getting prepped, he will put a boat in his mouth. And I'm like, you can't fuck with that immunity. That's yeah, he should probably be the last man standing. And same episode, the other thing that grossed me out is, so it starts with like Rick coming out and he walks up to this like barrel of standing water outside and he puts his hands in it and just puts the water all over his face. I'm like, that is disgusting. I'm like, how long has that water been sitting out there? Like, y'all, standing water can be dangerous. I had a cousin who damn near died from listeria. Standing water is not your friend, y'all. You got to be careful with standing water. So it just, that's the shit in Walking Dead that disgusts me. Oh, also the idea of like people fucking, and I have questions about like sanitary, like that also gives me the icks. But the zombies don't bother me so much. But that lady opening her mouth with that hair in it, I was like, I just wanted to hurl. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And that person stuck the harvest fungus.
Oh my God.
Gross. I'm sorry.
I am laughing so hard because me and my friends had the same discussion about sex in The Walking Dead. And we were just like, the yeast infection. We're just like, oh my God, the yeast infection's running rampant. How? Y'all are so dirty.
Listen.
I'm just laughing because I've had this conversation before.
Especially when you know people are like fucking before they have like a permanent, like stable home. Like, you know, like I had a lot of questions about Glenn and Maggie because they were definitely fucking on the regular.
A lot.
Before they got the prison set up and got the you know, the running water. And I'm like, if I don't feel clean, the last thing I want to do is have, like, you are not getting anywhere near me or this or anything that's going on. And I'm someone who washes, like, you know what I mean? I don't even like a lot of hair on my body. Like, I have gotten most of the hair on my body lasered off because I'm like, I just don't want it. And honestly, I was kind of inspired by the zombie apocalypse because I was like, I don't want to be in the zombie apocalypse trying to, like, find a fucking razor. because I know I'm feeling the icks because I'm funky and I haven't washed in 10 months. And I'm like, no. So if the shit breaks down, I'm going to still be funky, but I'm not going to have like this issue.
I'm laughing so hard. Okay, I'm so sorry. Okay, this has nothing to do with this, but I'm laughing because I just had this conversation with a friend about White Lotus, which I'm not going to talk about the show and whatever. This has nothing to do with it. But in season 2, there is a character that takes a shower, and the shower lasted for like literally 0.2 seconds. Oh. And I have never been so upset. So I literally called the friend that recommended the show to me, and I was like, bitch, this man showered for less than a second. I hate you. I was so angry and disgusted. I was like, bitch, you didn't even give soap enough time to lather. That was not a shower. You are not clean. I was so angry. Anyways, like, that is like gonna traumatize me for a long time. That fucking lack of a shower traumatized me.
Yes, because it's like, sir, I know you didn't wash your balls. I know you didn't hit them pits, and I know your ass is still dirty. So you need to get back in the shower. And it's so funny that you mentioned that, because there is this TikTok that's circulating right now.
God.
Usually this is when I would say, oh, I'll post in the show notes. I am not doing that because it's disgusting. And I want to hope that the whole thing is staged, because when I went to the young man's TikTok, he has he's like millions and millions of followers. So I'm like, there's no way this TikTok is real. Y'all sage as shit. But basically it's this TikTok where it's this couple and the girl is saying, she's trying to test whether or not her boyfriend was taking proper showers. So she like goes into the bathroom and like under everything that you would use for a shower. So the soap, the body wash, there's like, I think a scrubber, and it's something, it's like four objects. She puts something down under all of them so that like if he had used them, you would know, because they would either be smeared, smudged, or like they would have washed away in the water from the shower. So he says he takes a shower. She goes behind him, goes to the different things like the bar of soap, the scrub brush, the shower gel, and then something else. And all of them, the stuff that she put down, all of it is uninterrupted. And so she confronts him, Lord. And she's like, did you take a shower? And he's like, yeah, I took a shower. And she's like, but you didn't use anything. And he's like, I used water. And she's like, but how did you wash your ass? Water. And he just keeps saying water. Oh, and I'm like, sir, I'm like, this is a level of embarrassment. I'm like, first of all, this is why I hope it's a setup. Because I'm like, first and foremost, if that's my partner, I am not going to record for millions of strangers to see that the person that I'm fucking only uses water to wash their ass. Because you know, I don't care how much C over D, cologne over dirt you put on your ass, if only using water, there are your cracks and crevices are not going to smell good. And I presume that if two people are fucking, there are going to be occasions when you are going to get into some of those cracks and crevices, and you're going to know. So I would never admit to anybody that my partner don't wash their ass with soap.
Don't wash his ass? No. Oh, I'm upset.
And so I was like, okay, I need more information. So I went to the young man's TikTok. This is how I know he has like millions of followers and why I think this was all just a setup for exposure. In the comments, he was like, that was just a rinse off. I took a proper shower. I'm like, that is not how a fucking shower works. And if somebody comes to you and they're like, did you take a shower? It was a lot. Like, I need y'all to use soap. And listen, this is no judgment to people who, if you are not in a position, if you are like challenged with housing and things, we're not casting judgment on those folks. We're not casting judgment on folks who have mental or physical conditions that just, listen, depression, you might not be showering because that shit happens. We're not talking about those situations. We're talking about people who have no excuse for going into a shower and not using soap and coming out and telling their partner, I used water.
Girl. Oh, I cannot. Let's talk about yeast infections. I cannot.
Just all of the ick in the world. Okay, let me spare both of our stomachs and both of our sensitivities. Let me get us back. Okay, was there anything in the pilot that didn't work for you, Candy?
Am I so predictable that I'm like, I loved it?
No, listen, yeah.
I really thought it was, no, honestly, I really thought it was great. I appreciate that they explained shit, that we got to see stuff in real time. And then also, too, I feel like they showed why the hell Ellie's there in the very end. And I was like, oh, nice. I'm glad I didn't have to wait 5 episodes to see what was the point of this girl. So I truly loved it. I'm sorry.
No.
I don't have notes at this time.
Listen, that is valid. And I completely agree with you. So there was a point in the pilot, like, you know, I was looking at the outline. I was starting to take notes. And there was a point when we got like to the 20-year time jump. And we're just sort of getting beat over the head with just basically how horrible things are. And not horrible because of the zombies, but horrible because of the horrible people in charge. And there was part of me that was like, ooh, this is a lot. This is a lot to take in. I'm feeling overwhelmed. Maybe I would have liked a little bit more of this in episode 2. But then when I got to the end of the episode and I really understood why they kind of introduced us to that tension between the military forces, you know, the federal government and this resistance that we're seeing brewing. And then you get Ellie in the picture. I was like, oh, this all makes sense. I don't have any nitpicks about this episode. Like, it just worked for me from top to bottom. And I love to be able to have a moment where I'm calling something into question to only then, like maybe 10 minutes later, it all makes sense. And I'm like, okay, I trust the process. I trust the vision. Y'all got me. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Agreed.
Well, love that. Well, based on the pilot, Candy, what are you looking forward to most this season?
Okay, I'm sorry. I forgot to mention this part. I'm going to give one more shout out to something I really liked. I liked that this is filmed like a video game. I feel like they filmed, not in the in the beginning, but like when the apocalypse shoots off, I feel like it's filmed like a video game, like when they're in the car and they're running through the town and stuff. And you're seeing stuff from their point of views when they're in the alleyways and stuff. So I just think this is based on a video game. I like that they film a lot of the action sequences like it's a video game. So sorry, that was like a side note that I forgot to bring up.
No. I'm glad you brought it up. And I want to just give one comment to that and then I'll shut up. I completely agree. It was not on my list. So I'm glad that you mentioned it. And in particular, that scene where they're in the truck and I don't know if it's an explosion. I don't know what it is, but whatever that thing is, it takes them out. The way that that is filmed is, it is like, and I know that that is stuff that comes from the video game. And so that adaptation, that ability to take that and give us this visual experience that feels like a video game was really impressive, but completely agree. Cause like any video game you play, something takes you out. There's always sort of that blackout moment, like that pew. You're like, oh shit, bitch, I'm down. I got hit. What the fuck? And you're like a little bit disoriented and trying to figure out what the fuck is going on, trying to assess damage. It really did sort of play out second by second like a video game. So I'm so glad that you mentioned that for sure.
Yes, sorry. So I'm so sorry. Can I have the prompting? Because I was like, oh, I forgot to mention that.
No. You can absolutely have it again. And do not apologize because it's a great point. And I'm so glad that you brought it up. So the prompt, let me get back to it. Okay. So based on the pilot, Candy, what are you looking forward to most this season?
Oh, okay. So at the very end of the pilot, we see, I keep saying Bella, Ellie's arm or hand. Because the thing that scans whether or not you're infected, it goes red on her. And then they're like, what the? So there's a moment of, what the fuck? We need to put this bitch down. And she's telling him, I'm fine. And she shows them her hand. And that she has like a little thing there. It's not like grandma zombies. It's not full blown. She don't got shit coming out of her. She don't got tentacles coming out of her mouth. But clearly there is something going on where she's been, I don't know if she was bit or something, but she's been infected in some way. She made the meter go off.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but because Joel just beat a man to death, a cop to death. They gotta go. They gotta move. So that's where it ends. So something huge just happened, but they still got to keep moving and they're on the run.
Yeah.
So I have a million questions. I'm very interested to see, is Ellie the cure? Is she the chosen one? That's why they have to protect her at all costs. What's going on with that? So I'm very excited to learn more about the disease and if there's a possible cure and where Ellie fits into that.
I love that you mentioned that. And I should just jump to my next question, but I'm not, because I want to react. So because it ties to something you just said, but I completely agree. And I also love, another thing I loved about the pilot is that they gave us enough for it to be believable that they wouldn't immediately put her down. Right? Like, because they know something is special about her. They have this whole exchange over the battery and all that bullshit, you know, with the resistance folks. So it's believable that even though she set that test off, that their first move wouldn't be, because Joe and Tess, they don't fuck around. They are survivalists. Like, they do not play with fuck around and find out. No, you fuck around, you're going to find out on their watch. Like, they're going to put you down. You're not going to come for them. They're going to come for you. And I love that we had enough to make it believable that they would, that the instinct would be, this shit ain't right. We're not going to put you down yet. We're going to get out of here and then we'll sort it out, I guess, next episode. So I love that it was a believable choice for both of them. But to your point, Joel was also, I think, disoriented because he'd had the trigger, you know, the Sarah memory killed the, you know, basically, I don't know if that man, I'm assuming that man is dead, killed a man with his bare hands. So he was disoriented. But I think all of that served to make it believable. I think for me, I am just excited for the inevitable point in which Ellie and Joel, shift into the full-blown, heartwarming father-daughter dynamic that is going to simultaneously please me, but also destroy me, because it's clear that this is not a show that is focused on happy endings for a lot of folks. No. And doesn't really feel like a lot of people are safe. We need Ellie safe, but who the fuck knows? Because this show is very dark and bleak. And so I'm not looking forward to the moment when I cry because something terrible happens, but I'm looking forward to enjoying the journey along the way in which these two shift into, because it's inevitable. I mean, even like the parallels, like when Ellie mentions your watch is broken. And I was like, oh, bitch, the watch is Sarah fixed. Yeah. And even the thing with the knife, you know, Ellie has her little protective knife. And we see that scene where Sarah, you know, is fiddling around with the knife in Joe's drawer. And I mean, Joe wasn't privy to that moment, so it's not a recollection for him. But as an audience viewer, I was like, oh, okay. Clearly this is where we're going. Like, and everybody knows that. But I like that they're setting it up and I like where it's going and I think we're going to love it and I think it's going to destroy us and make us cry. Candy, anything on that before I go to my other question that you kind of just, that you gave me a perfect segue for?
No, I'm looking forward to finding out Ellie's more details and about the disease.
So I loved, you raise an interesting point, Candy, about, like, okay, so we know that Ellie has clearly been exposed to it, but she's not a zombie. She tests positive or sets off the test because she's been exposed to it, but her arms suggest, listen, she didn't go full-blown zombie. So she's clearly, she has to be a key to figuring out how do we overcome this situation? How do we get out of this? Like, her blood is like She-Hulk blood. Like, that shit valuable, bitch. How you survive that? Mm-hmm. Right? But given that neither of us have engaged in the source material, I wanted to hear your opinion, you know, based on the pilot in particular. Does this really feel like a show that is solution oriented? Because I'm not sure that I know that based on the pilot. Like, Ellie, clearly, there is clearly something about her that could be part of the answer. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I walked out of this pilot not confident that that's what story we're being told. Is the point that we're going to get to a solution, or is the point that we're going to be completely invested in their relationship and the hope that she presents? only for it maybe not to work out because no one is safe in this world. What kind of show do you think we're watching?
I don't know, but I will say I need it to be. I need there to be some kind of a hope. I need it, okay? And I'm going to be the ones that bring up The Walking Dead, God dang it. Because I just feel like they just removed, like the minute anyone showed any modicum of morality or was a good person, they slaughtered them.
Yeah.
And that was a pattern in that show. And that shit is out. It is soul crushing. And after a while, you just lose hope. So I understand that this is a bleak, dark show. And it's a bleak video game. But I mean, honestly, in all video games, you have to have some, there has to be a hope. There has to be a, I can beat the game. I can beat this. Like even in like Dead, I was going to say, unless it's like Dead by Daylight, but even in Dead by Daylight, you're still trying to survive. You're trying to live. You're not just laying down waiting for the killers to kill you, even though you do get killed a lot, but you're still trying not to die. There's always, you're trying not to die. So I need them to try to not to die, to try to reach for a cure. Maybe, I don't know if it's possible. If it's not possible, I'd be like, okay, I get it. But I still need them to reach for it. I need there to be some type of hope in this bleak ass show, please.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I do think that that is kind of part of the formula for all these shows, regardless of how bleak they get, how dark they get, how many people die, there's always hope. And I guess, you know, if it seems like the obvious, like, journey would probably be one in which Ellie has to continue on without Joel, would seem like the obvious place. But, you know, how long it takes for us to get there, who knows? I hope it's a long journey because I like these two together. But that seems more likely than the alternative in which, you know, Ellie never gets to, I don't know. Frankly, we don't even know yet, like, who would be a trusted source to actually explore what the ramifications are of whatever it is in Ellie. Oh, God, that could become so dark. Okay, I can't do all this dark speculation. Let me just cut it off from there because we're in the home stretch. And this is the time, Candy, where I ask you to kindly let our listeners know where they can find you on social media.
All right, my pretty peoples. I made all of these backups waiting for the day for Elon to just finally burn this shit to the ground. But I don't go on them because by some miracle, Twitter is still standing, and that is my main hub. So all of my social media is under So Very Tired. It's S, the number 0, Very Tired. And you will most likely see me yelling into the void on them Twitter streets.
Yes, yes, yes. I agree. I've set up backups, but it's still Twitter, IG, and Tumblr are the main places where you can find and follow this podcast. And the handle on all of those sites is More Wine Pod. I do think if the Bot Sentinel folks get their act together, I might consider a permanent transfer there because they seem to be responsibly, you know, trying to develop a platform. But for now, like Andy, most active on those Twitter streets at More Wine Pod, but also on Tumblr and Instagram. So also, guys, if you have the time and you're listening to it and you like what you're hearing, please kindly go on wherever it is that you're listening to podcasts. If you would kindly go on and leave a 5-star rating, would really appreciate it. And you can send longer feedback to morewinepod@gmail.com, especially for you video game folks. Like if you have like thoughts, feedback about like how the show is adapting the source material, the video game in particular, please send it in. I will read it on the episode. We would love to hear from you. Like I said, Candy and I will weave a little bit, you know, we'll do a little something every now and then. But we welcome your feedback. If you have thoughts about how the showrunners have managed to adapt the source material, we would love to hear it. All right, Candy. As always, it's my favorite segment. It's the third segment. I'm not really sure how this is going to go for this particular show. But for pod newbies, this is where we go from our wholesome thoughts to our lusty thoughts about whatever property we're covering. It's the third segment. I ask my guests to respond to a thirst prompt inspired by the property they were covering. So let's get into it. This is going to be like a really high level sort of basic pumpkin spice latte one. But I promise y'all, I'll get some better. I need a little bit more. I need to see more of the show. I'll get into some more, I think, specific thirst prompts. But I wanted to keep this one a little bit just topical and light. But Candy, I would love to know who from this cast. And the full season cast is fair game. We just won't give spoilers about who the person is playing. Doesn't have to just be the pilot. But who is hot enough to make you set aside any concerns that we have now previously discussed? So glad that this came up. It wasn't planning on it. But we previously shared our concerns about hygiene, smells, and the various other factors that might make sex less than ideal in a zombie apocalypse. Who, Candy, from this cast would have you out here risking it funk, body odor, hygiene, smells, bacteria, pH balance, STI. I mean, because you, I mean, STDs are also an issue, folks. And pregnancy. I mean, that might be the worst consequence, because who the fuck wants to have a kid in a fucking zombie apocalypse? Like, there are just so many different red flags. When one ventures to have sex in the zombie apocalypse, which is from my perspective, every reason why, like, if you're going to really do the deed, you need to like really like be all in. So that's going to take like, I think a very high level of thirst to make you put all of those factors aside and say, I got to have you. Candy, who from this cast would have you out here risking the funk of it and all?
Okay, I acknowledge how fine Pedro Pascal is, and even Gabriel Luna, who played Tommy, I acknowledge how fine the men in this series are, but when I was looking at the full cast, there are some gorgeous, wonderful women that are going to be coming up in the series. I don't know when, I don't know what their role is, but Regina Wesley is going to be in this show. I was very excited to see her, and my main one, Melanie Linsky, I love her. She has, I remember the first time I saw her was in the Cinderella one with Drew Barrymore, Ever After, and she's been getting a lot of praise for being in Yellow Jackets. I haven't seen Yellow Jackets yet. It's on my list, but I think Melanie Linsky is very beautiful and attractive. I don't know what her role is going to be in this show, but I feel like she would be hygienic conscious. So I think she'd be a safe bet and very beautiful. I'd stick with Melanie regarding my Last of Us there. So I'm just saying.
Okay. I love that. I'm so glad you mentioned Regina Wesley, because she was like my backup. So mine is a gentleman who I loved from an NBC sitcom. He was not in this pilot, but he is confirmed in this series. I also love him because he married an older woman, and I feel like they have really hot sex together. My choice is Nick Offerman, a.k.a. Okay. Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec. I just really love Nick Offerman. I just love him. And yes, to your point, like, you know, Pedro would be an obvious choice, although frankly, I love Pedro. Did not love him out here liking tweets about how Will Smith made all minorities look bad after the slap. So that took Pedro's stock down just a teeny tiny bit for me. But yes, and agree about Gabriel Luna. I was like, ooh, he's hot. Like, I was like, ooh, there are some good choices. But when I looked at the cast, Nick Offerman was the one that I was most excited about. And I think he really works in an apocalyptic setting, because not only do I find him hot, but he kind of has this vibe where I feel like I would feel safe and protected around him. So it just works. I love Ron Swanson. I don't love his libertarian ways, but I do love a man who loves breakfast food and who wanted to eat all of the bacon in the world. And I love Nick Offerman, though, more so as a person, because he seems like, you know, a cool dude with good beliefs, a solid person. If he's been milkshake ducked, I guess you can let me know. It would devastate me, but I guess you should let me know so I can revoke my stand card. But I do love him. I love, love, love his marriage with Megan Mullally. Like, I just feel like those two have off the charts chemistry. I love them together. And so I might risk it all. This is still a might, because y'all have heard me very in very graphic detail, talk about all of the issues that I have in a current day society where we have access to soap and water. So I might just become like, God, I hate admit it. Would I be an incel? Like, I'd be an involuntary celibate. Like, oh God, I hate that for me. An incel without the incel ways and means and beliefs, but involuntarily celibate nonetheless, because I'd be like, I don't want this, but I mean, this is where we are. But if I were going to risk it all, I would probably give Nick Offerman a go. So that wraps us up. As always, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Mommy Need More Wine. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and tell everyone you know to do the same. And again, if you love us, leave us a 5-star review and tell a friend to subscribe. You know where to find and follow Candy. I'll put it in the show notes, but it is so S the number 0, very tired. And this podcast is More Wine Pod on all platforms. Thank you so much for listening. Please check out our other episodes. More recently, I've got episodes on The Bear, House of the Dragon. Candy and I did coverage of all of She-Hulk. I've got Sleepy Hollow, The Reckoning, Abbott Elementary. And I don't know, I guess it depends on when this comes out. It'll be out before this. Interview with the Vampire is on deck. So it is already set.
I can't wait for that.
I had so much fun. Y'all have got to watch that show. And I hope that if you listen, that Terrence and I do a good job at convincing you guys why you should watch it, because you absolutely should check it out. I think that's probably going to end up coming out before this. But I mean, it's currently scheduled to come out this next Wine Wednesday. But we'll see, because it'll depend on how quickly the editor gets this one done. I might have to push it back to let this one come out. But just know, Interview with the Vampire is on deck with Terrence, who is my unofficial expert on all things vampire for the podcast after he endured my 5-hour conversation with him about True Blood. So lots of fun stuff on deck. And just learned that season 2 of Grand Crew is coming out in March. So Candy and I will absolutely do some follow-up coverage of that show, because we loved it. Did you see it, Candy? The trailer is out and everything. It looks so good.
No, I didn't know. I knew that it was renewed, but I didn't know that I didn't know the date that was set. So yay.
Yes. Go to Nicole Byer on IG. We've got a date and we've got a trailer and it looks fun. So that will be somewhere on the horizon, like down the road. I don't know when, but you guys should put that on your radars, because it's a show you should be watching. And if you haven't watched it, check out our catalog, because Candy and I talked all about the first season of Grand Crew and why it's a show that you should absolutely watch and have on your radar. Guys, until next time, thank you, Candy. That is it.
Audio Podcast Network.